Because a great Vaishnava, a great Vaishnava, Vidura, has met another equally great Vaishnava, Uddhava. Both of them had experienced Krishna's personal presence and had engaged in loving reciprocal dealings with Krishna. But both of them were feeling deep separation from Krishna because Krishna had left this world. So by Krishna's arrangement, they met each other. And Vidura began asking Krishna, began asking Uddhava about Krishna and about all the associates of Krishna, the members of the Yadu dynasty, the members of the Pandavas, about Balaram. He knew, Vidura knew, that Krishna had already left this world, but yet he was asking because he was feeling so much separation from Krishna. He was still asking. So, after asking Uddhava so many questions, before Uddhava answered, just by being provoked to remember Krishna, Uddhava went into great ecstasy. He went into such deep ecstasy and remembrance of Krishna that the result was that he was associating with Krishna, practically speaking, in the spiritual world. This deep association with Krishna is called uppercut lila or unmanifested lila. And interestingly enough, this was the message that Krishna, how to do that, how to associate with Krishna when Krishna is not present with us, was the message that Krishna had Uddhava bring to the gopis. And the message that Krishna explained to Uddhava just before Krishna left this world in the Uddhava Gita in Dwarka. So Uddhava, due to his great, great love for Krishna, he experienced Krishna's association. And then, because he wished to reply to Vidura, he came down to this world again and he began to reply. Now Vidura had asked him, please tell me how our family members, the Yadus, are. But Krishna had left this world, and therefore Uddhava replied, text 7, my dear Vidura, the son of this world, Lord Krishna, has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? Uddhava had asked, or Vidura had asked, about how the Yadu dynasty was doing, and the reply was, how could we be doing well? What can I say about our welfare when the son of Krishna has set? And our house, meaning the Yadu dynasty, has now been swallowed by the snake of time. Prabhupada explains right at the end of the purport, at sunset, because the metaphor is being explained, that Krishna is like the sun, because when the sun comes, the sun diminishes darkness. So when Krishna comes, he diminishes all irreligiosity, all ignorance, and then Krishna Swadam Upagate Dharma Jnana Devisaha. When Krishna leaves, he takes with him all religiousness and all knowledge. And that is compared to like the sun setting, and Prabhupada explains in the purport. As at sunset, the snakes become powerful, thieves are encouraged, ghosts become active, and the lotus becomes disfigured, and the Chakravaki laments. So with the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the atheists feel enlivened and the devotees become sorry. So the snakes come out when the sun sets, and the snake has devoured the Yaru dynasty, the snake of separation from Krishna. So he says, what can I say about our welfare, the welfare of the Yaru dynasty? Prabhupada explains in the purport. The disappearance of the Krishna son may be explained as follows, according to the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Vidura was struck with great sorrow when he got the hint of the annihilation of the great Yaru dynasty, as well as of his own family, the Kuru dynasty. Uddhava could understand the grief of Vidura, and therefore he first of all wanted to sympathize with him by saying that after the sunset, everyone is in darkness. Since the entire world was merged in the darkness of grief, neither Vidura, nor Uddhava, nor anyone else could be happy. And practically speaking, that is the situation, because Kali Yuga actually begins when Krishna leaves this world, approximately 5,000 years ago. And basically, no one is happy. Everyone is dealing with the shadows of the material world and seeking happiness in the realm of shadows. But the actual light, Krishna, is no longer present, and people are not happy, they are not satisfied. Uddhava was as much aggrieved as Vidura, and there was nothing further to be said about their welfare. The comparison of Krishna to the sun is very appropriate. As soon as the sun sets, darkness automatically appears. But the darkness experienced by the common man does not affect the sun itself either at the time of sunrise or of sunset. Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are exactly like that of the sun. He appears and disappears in innumerable universes, and as long as he is present in a particular universe, there is all transcendental light in that universe. But the universe from which he passes away is put into darkness. Because naturally the material universes are dark. They are naturally dark, like the inside of a coconut. Dark. So the only light that enters is by Krishna's mercy when in some way or another, Golokera Premadana Harinama Sankirtan, anything transcendental enters by the mercy of Krishna. That is the only light. Everything else is simply darkness. So Uddhava says, we are all suffering. How could we be happy after Krishna has disappeared? The universe, with all its planets, is most unfortunate, he continues. And even more unfortunate are the members of the Yaru dynasty, because they could not identify Lord Hari as the personality of Godhead any more than the fish could identify the moon. Now, Prabhupada explains this in his purport. Now, he explains, as the verse explains, that there are two kinds of unfortunates here. One is the ordinary people. The universe with all its planets is most unfortunate. All the people in general are unfortunate because they could not recognize who Krishna was. But still more unfortunate, he says, are the members of the Yaru dynasty, because they could not actually fully understand him, even though they understood something about him. And the next verse, which I'll read now also explains something similar, why the Yaru dynasty is considered unfortunate. The Yarus were all experienced devotees, learned and expert in psychic study. Over and above this, they were always with the Lord in all kinds of relaxations, and still they were only able to know him as the Supreme One who dwells everywhere. They knew him only as the Supersoul. Prabhupada explains in the purport to 8, where he explains both these kinds of unfortunates. And in the next verse, there is a comparison. Uddhava lamented for the unfortunate persons of the world who could not recognize Lord Sri Krishna in spite of seeing all his transcendental godly qualities. So this is the situation. People hear Bhagavad Gita. They'll read about Krishna somehow or another. Hear that he's the Lord. But still they won't be able to recognize or accept him despite the fact that they hear about him. So that is very unfortunate. From the very beginning of his appearance within the prison bars of King Kamsa up to his Moshalalila, his disappearance, although he exhibited his potencies as the personality of Godhead in the six opulences of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, the foolish persons of the world could not understand that he was the Supreme Lord. Foolish persons might have thought him an extraordinary heroic figure because they had no intimate touch with the Lord. They might have thought that he's an ordinary person, maybe heroic, but they could not understand what he was exhibiting, especially in Vrindavan, the transcendental leelas. But more unfortunate were the members of the family members of the Lord, the members of the Yadu dynasty, who are always in company with the Lord, but were unable to recognize him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Uddhava lamented his own fortune, although he knew Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could not properly use the opportunity to render devotional service to the Lord. He regretted everyone's misfortune, including his own. The pure devotee of the Lord thinks himself most unfortunate. Why? That is due to excessive love for the Lord. And it is one of the transcendental perceptions of Varaha, the suffering of separation. In other words, Uddhava served Krishna in so many ways, but despite the fact that he served Krishna so wonderfully, despite the fact that he served Krishna so wonderfully, there were two factors. One factor was that he could not serve the Lord to the extent of his love for the Lord. So he never felt like he was doing enough or was serving Krishna properly. This is due to his great, great love for Krishna. And also, we can't say secondarily, but because he saw when Krishna sent him to Vrindavan, he saw the love that the residents of Vrindavan had for Krishna. So he thought that he could not serve Krishna properly after seeing their love and their mood of worship and their mode of service. Because service to Krishna or love for Krishna is exhibited by how one attempts to please him. So who could please Krishna more than the residents of Vrindavan? So Uddhava was feeling himself unfortunate. He was feeling the Yadu dynasty unfortunate because the Yadu dynasty understood that Krishna was the super soul, but they did not understand him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of the super soul, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Sayam. And still more, in one sense, the most unfortunate were the ordinary people of the world, and ordinary people hear about Krishna, but who do not accept his position as the Supreme Lord. Still more unfortunate, really. So Uddhava, when Krishna was leaving, due to his great separation from Krishna, he was just seeing unfortunateness and misery everywhere. But it was all on the transcendental platform. And Prabhupada explains more in text 9, in the purport to text 9, about the reason why the Yadavas were unfortunate. In the Vedas, it is said that the Supreme Lord, or the Paramatma, cannot be understood simply by the strength of one's erudition or power of mental speculation. Nayamatma pravachanena labhyo namedhaya nabhuna shrutena, from the Katha Upanishad. How can he be known? How can the Lord be known? He can't. One's own power cannot know the Lord. How can he be known? He can be known only by one who has the mercy of the Lord. The Yadavas were all exceptionally learned and experienced, but in spite of their knowing the Lord as the one who lives in everyone's heart, They could not understand that he is the original personality of Godhead. This lack of knowledge was not due to their insufficient erudition. It was due to their misfortune. In Vrindavan, however, the Lord was not even known as the Paramatma, because the residents of Vrindavan were pure, unconventional devotees of the Lord and could not think of him, and could think of him only as the object of their love. They did not know that he is the personality of Godhead. The Yadus, or residents of Dwarka, however, could know Lord Krishna as Vasudeva, or as the super soul living everywhere, but not as the Supreme Lord. So the Yadus, they thought of Krishna as Eko Deva Sava Bhuta Dvisha Antayami Vrishnanam Paradevata. They didn't understand Krishna as more than the super soul, but actually Krishna is the source of the super soul. So if one understands Krishna as a super soul, he's very fortunate in one sense. But one, if one is associating with Krishna directly and only seeing him as a super soul, he's unfortunate in another sense, because he's not understanding the highest realizations of Krishna and therefore missing out on the highest way of rendering service and therefore the highest ecstasies as well. But Uddhava, as text 10 explains, was in somewhat a different position. He explains. He knows, because he knows who Krishna is. Prabhupada had explained that in the previous purport, that Uddhava knew Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So no matter what anyone else would say, he understood Krishna's position. So therefore he says in text 10, under no circumstances can the words of persons bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord deviate the intelligence of those who are completely surrendered souls. Prabhupada explains in the purport, and this is in the second half of the purport, the Yadavas and other devotees of the Lord are different from those who wrongly calculate him to be ordinary human personalities. So when we hear that the Yadus are more unfortunate, in one sense they're more unfortunate because they had the personal association of Krishna, but yet they could not understand who the limits of Krishna consciousness. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabyate. They could not understand the highest understanding of Bhagavan, the Vrindavan Krishna. Yasoda nandana nandana nandana. Like that. So in one sense they were unfortunate, but they were certainly also so much more fortunate than those who thought that Krishna was ordinary. So therefore Prabhupada explains, they were certainly different from those who wrongly calculated him to be an ordinary human personality. Such persons are certainly bewildered by the illusory energy. They are hellish and are envious of the Supreme Lord. The illusory energy acts very powerfully on them because in spite of their elevated mundane education, such persons are faithless and are infected by the mentality of atheism. So therefore, people who do not accept Krishna because of the tendency towards atheism and faithlessness, the illusory energy captures them and does not let them go. Even though people are so proud and think themselves so wonderful, because they actually have this tendency towards atheism, they are so caught by the illusory energy. And they're envious, envious of Krishna. This is the ultimate fault of every conditioned soul. It is envy of Krishna. We don't want to accept that God can do these things. We prefer to him to be impersonal. Envy of Krishna. And that places one under the control of the illusory energy, and there's no way to get free from this control unless one gives up the envy and becomes a servant of Krishna rather than one who is attempting to enjoy the material world. This is the symptom of our envy, that we attempt to enjoy that which is meant for Krishna and Krishna's pleasure. And therefore, due to that attempt to enjoy, we are caught. We're grabbing the material energy. Because we're trying to grab it, the material energy grabs us. Like the monkey who puts his hand in a thin bowl, a jar, and he's grabbing some food. And the jar, because his hand is expanded, he's holding something, he can't get his hand out, and he thinks the jar has caught him. But actually, if he would just let go, he could take his hand out. So if we that letting go is acknowledging our position in relationship with Krishna, that we are actually Krishna's servants, that we are not meant to enjoy the material world, it is not meant for our pleasure. So Prabhupada then gives some examples of how the illusory energy is working on what type of people it works on. The illusory energy acts very powerfully on them because in spite of their elevated mundane education, such persons are faithless and are infected by the mentality of atheism. They are always very eager to establish that Lord Krishna was an ordinary man who was killed by a hunter due to his many impious acts in plotting to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and Jarasandha, the demoniac kings of the earth. Such persons have no faith in the statement of the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord is unaffected by the reactions of work. Namam kamanilam panti. According to the atheistic point of view, Lord Krishna's family, the Yadu dynasty, was vanquished due to being cursed by the Brahmanas for the sins committed by Krishna in killing the sons of Dhritarashtra. All these blasphemies do not touch the heart of the devotees of the Lord because they know perfectly well what is what. Their intelligence regarding the Lord is never disturbed. But those who are disturbed by the statements of the Asuras are also condemned. That is what Uddhava meant in this verse. So, there are those who did not see Krishna, understand him when he was on the planet. What happens after his departure? Because Krishna has just departed, Uddhava then explains. Lord Sri Krishna, who manifested his eternal form before the vision of all on the earth, performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him as he is due to not executing required penance. Very interesting verse. He removed himself from the sight of those who are unable to see him. In other words, those who are unable to see him when he left could see him, could continue to not see him, which implies that those who could see him while he was on the planet actually saw him, continued to see him. Prabhupada explains in the purport the different results of those who knew Krishna and didn't know Krishna. And why do those who don't see Krishna not see Krishna? It is due to their impiety, spiritual impiety, material attachment, etc. The Lord himself comes to display his transcendental pastimes, typically represented at Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. He appears just to attract the conditioned souls back to Godhead, back home to the eternal world. But for want of sufficient piety, the onlookers are not attracted by such pastimes of the Lord. So this is our position. Janiya shunya bishakainu. We are attracted to so many things in this world, but we are not attracted to Krishna. Even if Krishna is right there in front of us, we would find something else who attracts us still more. Because we don't have the piety, we are still in Maya. The onlookers are not attracted. Because sometimes we even say, we think, oh, I'll believe in Krishna if I could just see him like that. This is how we think. But actually, so many people saw him but still were not attracted. Why? Because he did not give them their mercy, his mercy. Why? Because they did not want it. Why? Because they wanted other things. So this is our situation. We want so many other things. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that only those who have completely surpassed the way of sinful reaction can engage themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The entire way, Vedic way of ritualistic performances, is to put every conditioned soul on the path of piety. By strict adherence to the prescribed principles for all orders of social life, one can attain the qualities of truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, forbearance, etc., and can be elevated to the plane of rendering pure devotional service to the Lord. So the Vedic system increased our piety, and the mundane Western civilization increases our what? Yes. And everyone said probably the same thing. Our material desires, our impiety, our sinfulness. Only by such a transcendental vision of Krishna can one's material hankerings fully be satisfied. When the Lord was present, persons who were able to satisfy their material hankerings by seeing him in true perspective were thus able to go back with him to his kingdom. But those persons who were unable to see the Lord as he is remained attached to material hankerings and were not able to go back home, back to Godhead. So why is it that Krishna comes to this world? We heard that he comes and to attract the living entities. But what is his purpose in coming? Now we will hear a tape where Prabhupada explains this.
That although he is the supreme authority of all energy, although he is unborn, although he is the lord of all planets, all creatures, material creatures and spiritual creatures, he comes. Ajumita Kapayama. He comes not being forced by the law of material nature, but he comes out of his own energy. This point we have discussed last night. Now, the next point is, why does he come? Let me just say in the next part that the Nagarajans are not the planet. As soon as there is discrepancy in the matter of discharging occupational duty, I purposely translate the word dharma as occupational duty. Everyone has thought occupational duty. Even the Bhagavatam also confirms this. Katakumi is a Sreshta. Varnashrama Bhagavata. Sarushidatta Dharmasya. The same word, Dharma. Sarushidatta. Prescribe duty. Sarushidatta Dharmasya. Some duty.
Why don't you put it on pause for a second?
How you are.
Is it too hot here? Too hot to understand?
But listen, by examining your occupational duty, how you say that taking your occupational duty will be perfect. What? Can you see? Why you Supreme Law by your opposition. That is
how. Of course. So Prabhupada is explaining how why Krishna comes. And he's quoting Yada Yada Hidamas Yad Dhvani of Bhavati Bharata. That he comes when Dhamma is down. He comes to reestablish Dharma. But what is Dharma that he's reestablishing? So Prabhupada explains that I purposely did not translate, when translating this, I did not translate Dharma as religion. I translated it rather as occupational duties. And then he quotes the verse, Sam Siddhim Haritoshanam, Sunustitasya Dhammasya, Sam Siddhim Haritoshanam. That the purpose of occupational duties is to please Krishna. So to reestablish the principle of religion or the principle of work, the purpose of it being to please Krishna, that is actually religion. Okay.
Now let us consider what is our opposition at this. And purposely do not translate this word, dharma, as religion. Religion is imperfect conception of the word dharma. In the dictionary, we find religion means a particular type of faith. But karma does not mean that. Karma means natural object. That is karma.
Okay, pause. So Prabhupada is explaining that dharma does not mean religion, because person's concept of religion is their faith. But dharma means something else. It means that what is your constitutional, natural occupation. The natural quality of the soul is its dharma, not his religion. And then Prabhupada will explain how one's religion can change. But if it can change, it is not one's natural constitutional position. And then he gives example of so many religions. Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, Jainism, Muslim religion, Islam.
Explain this word about in this class. Just like a seed of the fire. Without seed, the fire has no meaning. Wherever there is fire, there is seed of life. Therefore, seed of life is the dharma, a religion of man. That means, fire cannot change his dharma. As you generally understand, that you want faith, that you can do. Today, I am Hindu. I can become tomorrow a Christian. You are Christian today. You can become, and say, Hindu or something tomorrow. So, this faith can be changed. But this karma, as I said, that natural sequence, natural occupation, a natural intimacy, character, just like the fire, heat, light, this cannot be changed. Either the fire is in America, or the fire is in India, or the fire is in Russia. The heat and light is changed. That is accurate.
So, and then Prabhupada's giving the example. The natural, the constitutional position of the living entity is his true dharma. Just like And it can never be changed. It's our actual nature. That is the point that he's making. The Dharma is your nature. And we have fallen away from our actual nature. But it is still there. We have fallen away from acting properly according to our true nature, but that true nature can never be changed. And it is different from one's religion or one's faith, because one's religion or faith can be changed. A Hindu can become a Muslim can become a Christian, etc. But we cannot change our true nature any more than light can stop giving out heat, or fire can stop giving out heat and light. As soon as it stops giving out heat and light, it is no longer fire. It is the very nature of fire to give out heat and light. So similarly, what is the Dharma, the very essential nature of the living entity? That is what Krishna came to establish. Stop the tape here, but what Prabhupada is explaining, unfortunately, so I think a little too hard to discontinue. But he's explaining that, or he explains later too, that if we think that we are the body, then our natural constitutional position or constitutional activity is to please the body. If we think that we are our mind, then our natural dharma is to please the mind. But we are neither body nor mind, we are souls. We're eternal souls. That is who we are. So when people in this world neglect actual Dharma, when there is false Dharma, false occupations of trying to please the body and mind, when that becomes dominant, or a false understanding of what the soul is, and trying to act on that false level, then glaniya bhavati bharata bhutanam adhamasya. Tadatmanam sri jamyaham, Krishna says, I advent myself. So what then is the natural occupation of the soul that Krishna is coming to establish? That is samsadim haritoshanam. That is when the soul is acting to please Krishna. And that Prabhupada summarizes as from in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadhamam Pratyaja Mamekam Saranam Vraja, that giving everything to Krishna, completely giving everything to Krishna. And that position, when the soul completely gives himself to Krishna fully, that is the for Krishna's pleasure, that is the highest form of religion. And to attract people to that, to reestablish that as the highest principle of religion, or the highest natural constitutional activity for the soul, to reestablish that, Krishna comes. And therefore, he performs his different pastimes. And as Prabhupada will explain later in one of his purports, his dwarka pastimes, his mature pastimes, and especially his Vrindavan pastimes, to show the living entities how, to what extent their natural dharma, their natural constitutional position can be enacted for his pleasure, and to what extent, and the result of that, to the extent that if one fully gives himself to Krishna, as the residents of Vrindavan give themselves fully to Krishna, then Krishna becomes conquered by that type of religion. Samsadhiya haritoshanam. Everything done for haritoshanam, that is religion, for the pleasure of Hari, Krishna. That is actually what religion is. And when the soul becomes inflamed with that desire for Krishna's pleasure, then the soul, that soul is a religious soul. Then he is situated in his natural constitutional position. And then he is considered a pure devotee. Anyabhi lasita sanim gyanakaman avrita anakalena krishnana shilanam bhakti uttamam. That is first class devotion. Sava uparivinaya muktam tat paradvena nibalam rishikena rishikesha. The sense, the Lord of the senses is served by the senses. That is called pure devotional service. So to establish that, Krishna came. Now listen to these next verses. The Lord appeared. So we said this is why. Now Uddhava explained that the Lord came and he disappeared. And he says now why he appeared in the mortal world, text 12, by his internal potency, Sri Jamyaham, by his own mercy, by his own internal potency, Atmamayaya, Sambhavatyatmamaya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes were wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulence, including the Lord himself in his form of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus his, Sri Krishna's transcendental body is the ornament of all ornaments. This verse is actually a very famous verse. Yan ritnam martyalila paikam svayoga maya balam dasayata guhitam vishma panam svasyata sabhagadhe param padam bhushana bhushananangam. He is the ornament of ornaments. He makes the ornament beautiful. by his own presence. So Krishna's pastimes are so attractive that, and his form is so beautiful, because he's establishing that the soul's position is to give themselves completely to him. So he attracts all souls with his beautiful form and his beautiful pastimes. And his beautiful pastimes and his opulences are so wonderful that even the Lord of Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, becomes attracted to them. Yet, people in this world are so impious that they don't become attracted to the wonderful pastimes of the Lord. In the Vaikuntha Loka, the Lord is merciful towards the liberated or Nitya Mukta living entities. But in his pastimes in the mortal world, he is merciful even to the fallen souls who are Nitya Bada or conditioned forever. The six excellent opulences which he displays in the mortal world by the agency of his internal potency, Yogamaya, are rare even in the Vaikuntha Lokas. All his pastimes were manifested not by the material energy, but by his spiritual energy. The excellence of his Rasa Leela at Vrindavan and his household, the life with 16,000 wives, is wonderful even for Narayan and Vaikuntha, and is certainly so for other living entities within this mortal world. His pastimes are wonderful even for other incarnations of the Lord, such as Sri Ram, the Sringa, and Braha. His opulence was so super excellent that his pastimes... ...of Lord Krishna when he was present in this world. The most beautiful object in the material world may be compared to the blue lotus flower or the full moon in the sky. But even the lotus flower and the moon were defeated by the beauty of the bodily features of Lord Krishna. And this was certified by the demigods, the most beautiful living creatures in the universe. Text 14. The damsels of Braja, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. Purport. In his boyhood at Vrindavan, Lord Krishna was notorious as a teasing friend in transcendental love to all the girls his age. His love for them was so intense that there is no comparison to that ecstasy. And the damsels of Braja were so much attached to him that their affection excelled that of the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. Lord Krishna had finally admitted his defeat before the transcendental affection of the gopis and declared that he was unable to repay them for their unalloyed affection. So this is the perfection of religion. The love of the residents of Vrindavan was so great that Krishna himself becomes controlled by their love. Although the gopis were seemingly anguished by the Lord's teasing behavior, when Krishna would leave them, they could not tolerate the separation and they used to follow him with their eyes and mind. They were so stunned by the situation that they could not finish their household duties. No one could excel him, even in the dealings of love exchange between boys and girls. It is said in the revealed scriptures that Lord Krishna personally never goes beyond the boundary of Vrindavan. He remains there eternally because of the transcendental love of the inhabitants. Thus, even though he is not visible at present, he is not away from Vrindavan for a moment. So Krishna wanted to display religion, the highest form of Dharma, and he actually sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to see this. So Uddhava was speaking from his personal realization that he saw how the residents of Vrindavan had so, they were completely enwrapped in Haritoshanam. They had so much love for Krishna, they were so exalted in their love for Krishna, that no one or nothing or no religious sentiment could even closely compare to these, the most highest perfectional emblems of religion. And as Prabhupada said earlier and yesterday, some of the purports we read yesterday, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and embodied that, to teach that. How to become the highest, most religious, highest dharmic, giving, where one gives the soul, oneself completely to Krishna. That is the teachings of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And the Bhagavatam is teaching that. And Uddhava is the great teacher of this. So he's teaching on this now. This is the wonder of hearing the dialogue between these two great devotees, that we are getting a chance to enter into, practically speaking, to the highest truths. And then the final verse we'll read today. The personality of Godhead, the all-compassionate controller of both the spiritual and material creations, is unborn. But when there is friction between his peaceful devotees and persons who are in the material modes of nature, he takes his birth like fire accompanied by the Mahatattva. So the Bhagavad Gita describes, Yada yada hidamasya ghaniya bhavati bharata bhutanamadamasyam tadatmanam shijam yaham. And then paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chitaskritam dharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. That Krishna comes to reestablish the principles of religion, to protect the devotees, and to destroy the miscreants. So when the miscreants are fighting with the devotees, Krishna comes. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. This again shows how kind Krishna is to his devotees. That when they're in difficulty, he himself comes out of his great transcendental affection for them to remove their anxiety. Prabhupada explains, the devotees of the Lord are by nature peaceful because they have no material hankering. A liberated soul has no hankering and therefore he has no lamentation. One who wants to possess also laments when he loses his possession. Devotees have no hankering for material possessions and no hankerings for spiritual salvation. They are situated in the transcendental loving service of the Lord as a matter of duty, and they do not mind where they are or how they have to act. Karmis, jnanis, and yogis all hanker to possess some material or spiritual assets. Karmis want material possessions, jnanis and yogis want spiritual possessions, but devotees do not want any material or spiritual assets. They want only to serve the Lord anywhere in the material or spiritual worlds that the Lord desires. This is the natural occupational duty of the living entities. This is religion. This is what Krishna came to establish. This is Sarvadhamam Pratyaja, that one acts out of love for Krishna's pleasure, no other desire. And the Lord is always specifically compassionate towards such devotees. Now the last paragraph. Lord Krishna appeared just like electricity when there was friction between Kamsa and Vasudeva and Ugrasena. Vasudeva and Ugrasena were the Lord's devotees, and Kamsa, a representative of the Karmis and Jnanis, was a non-devotee. Krishna, as he is compared to the sun. He first appeared from the ocean of the womb of Devaki, and gradually he satisfied the inhabitants of the places surrounded by Mathura, just as the sun enlivens the lotus flower in the morning. After gradually rising to the meridian of Dwarka, the Lord set like the sun, placing everything in darkness, as described by Uddhav. Okay. So, I'm just sad that we could not hear directly what Prabhupada was saying, because I can't say it purely and nicely as he does. But very wonderful that this is actually what Dharma is. It is the soul's natural constitutional longing to give itself completely to the loving service of Krishna. And Krishna comes to establish that. And therefore he displays his wonderful pastimes, where he displays wonderful pastimes with wonderful devotees and shows his wonderful beauty that attracts all living entities. And there are also other meanings of that, but this is the one Prabhupada explained here. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Sri Uddhava, Sri Vidura, Sri Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Krishna Lila ki jai. Any questions or comments?
For the material hankering, seeing him in true perspective, what Vasa wanted to go back to with him to his kingdom. But those persons who are unable to see the Lord as he is remain attached to material hankerings and not able to go back to Godhead. So, can you explain what it means to satisfy one's material hankerings by seeing him in true perspective?
Yes. It means that if someone who has material hankerings is someone who has envy in their heart of Krishna. Some envy. But when one gives that up and sees Krishna as he is, and sees that Krishna is the Lord, and the all-beautiful, all-attractive, all-wonderful Lord, and himself as the humble, insignificant servant, and revels in the beauty of Krishna, he becomes satisfied. All his material hankerings become satisfied. The way to satisfy one's material hankerings is to not try to satisfy them in the material realm, because the material realm is the reflection of the spiritual realm, but to actually satisfy them in the spiritual realm. So if we long to look at beautiful things, we look at beautiful Krishna and our material hankering gets satisfied in a spiritual way. So those people who surrendered themselves to Krishna, who crossed to the side of the spiritual, went back to Godhead. But those who could not appreciate their relationship with Krishna, even though they saw Krishna, because one sees with one's consciousness, not just with one's eyes, even though they may have been seeing Krishna with their eyes, they could not see Krishna with the consciousness. That means Krishna didn't reveal his beauty to them and attract their consciousness. They had to stay in the material world, and that's what I was saying. Yeah.
Chapter 7. They mentioned something about chakra.
In verse 7? About what? By the great snake of time? This text 7 was Sri Uruva said, "My dear Vidura, the sun of the world, Lord Krishna, has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare?" Was that it?
Yeah, and then on the end of the first, they mentioned Kirtanas.
At the end of the purport?
Chakravarti.
Oh, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's explaining the mood of Uddhava, that he saw that Vidura was feeling so much separation, so much misery due to the fact that he knew that Krishna had left this world. So he was consoling him, meaning he was pacifying him, showing him sympathy by saying, "I'm also miserable, and everyone, how could anyone be happy knowing that Krishna has left? There's no question of..." Because he asked the question was, "How is this one doing? How is that one doing? How is this one doing?" So he... When you're unhappy, when you're really feeling miserable about something, if you see someone who's so happy, it doesn't console you at all. But if you see someone who says, "Yeah, I feel your misery, I feel the same type of misery," then there can be some communication between like that, and you feel some consolations. You can have a heart-to-heart exchange like that. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was explaining how Uddhava was very expert in developing the communication between the two of them. So he explained his own misery was parallel, the same as Vidura's misery. How can anyone be happy after Krishna had left? Okay, last question, Scott.
You mentioned Guru Narayan, he couldn't understand Krishna's
pastimes. Mentioned it or I read it? He couldn't understand. He was attracted. They were wonderful for everyone. His pastimes were wonderful. Even for those proud of their opulence, including the Lord himself in his form of Vaikuntha. And then later on in the purport, there was a mention of something similar. The excellence of the Rasa Leela at Vrindavan and his household life with 16,000 wives is wonderful, even for Narayan in Vaikuntha, and is certainly so for other living entities within this mortal world. I think that was what it was. It's considered even one. He even thought it was wonderful. So much so that when Krishna even looks at his own reflection, Krishna too becomes attracted to his own beauty. A kind of devotee who wished to worship the Lord with in his great opulence, Aishwarya. That's the opulence, the godly manifestation of the Lord's presence. Even Uddhava, a Dwarkavasi, was struck with wonder by the loving pastimes and the opulence of Vrindavan. But yet, because that is his... And then he performed austerities to attain that. But yet, that is his nature, to be in Dwarka. That is his rasa. His natural rasa is on that level. Or Brahma saw the pastimes. So sometimes, of course, they do different things. It's not ordinary. But the actual point that's being made, different from your question, is that Lord Narayan is attracted even. What to speak of ordinary human beings. So therefore we should become attracted. And why we're not attracted is because we're impious. We don't have spiritual credits. Therefore, we should increase our spiritual credits so we can become attracted, because this is the all-attractive, most wonderful thing. And it is due to our foolishness. But that wasn't exactly your question. Your question was simple, straightforward question, that if Lord Narayan is attracted, why don't his devotees change over? Because that would mean his devotees are attracted, and why don't they convert? Like that? Yeah.
So, but that would mean he could be under the control of his devotees.
Oh, you mean is he controlled?
Yeah.
Not really. But he's manifest there. He is there, and there are devotees who naturally love him and want to serve him in that relationship. So which came first, the sun or the sunlight? So, which came first? You have to say that the sun is the source of the sunlight, but as soon as there is sun, there's automatically sunlight. So to be Lord is meaningless without there being servants, because then you're not Lord of anything. Just like Prabhupada explained, if you're someone's a king, that means they have subjects in a kingdom. So as soon as there is God, there are living entities who worship God. It's just the way it is.
There's a possibility that some of servants of Krishna would like to have another manifestation of him.
Yes.
So, yes. He manifests. So it's in that sense he is under their control, that he understood their wish and manifested. But he is not under their control in the sense that he is being controlled by them in spite of him, you know, against his own wishes. No.
No, so Bunky's making the very sweet point that it's not exactly being controlled from looking at it from this side, but he's reciprocating with their love for him. Yes?
Yeah,
okay, it's fine. Srimad Bhagavatam.